And the reason he's important to the story of London is that he is one of the, I mean, really, I'd say only King Henry VIII back in the 1530s as a monarch had more influence on the city, particularly the West End, than this man here, the Prince Regent, because he really oversaw the remaking of the West End of London. So this image here on the left, you can see him. That's what he looks like. That's what he wanted everybody to look like. If you go to Windsor Castle, to the Garter Throne Room, you'll see this image of him here. But if you look on the satirical magazines, this is what you would have seen. He was a dissolute and drunken wastrel. I found this fantastic quote from the Dictionary of National Biography. The reason I'm talking about pretty in a bit of detail at the beginning is that the city of the time really was his city. So to understand London of this period, it's essential, I think, to understand Prynne. So we've got this quote about him from the Oxford Dictionary of National Biography. "There have been more wicked kings in English history, but none so unredeemed by any greatness or virtue. It cannot be denied that he was a dissolute and drunken fop, a spendthrift, a gamester, a bad son, a bad husband, a bad father, a bad subject, a bad monarch, and a bad friend. His word was worthless and his courage doubtful." That's the official line on George IV. He couldn't be more different from his very sober, very plain-living, plain-eating, plain-talking father, King George III. And as a young man, this is the fashion that Prynne followed. He was a macaroni. If you'd have been strolling through the streets of London of the late in the late 1700s, around Bond Street and Mayfair and St. James's, you would have seen gentlemen dressed like this. Macaronis, an Italianate fashion, with the high-heeled shoes and the brocade waistcoats and embroidery and diamond buttons and this huge wig with a tiny little hat perched on the top of it. He lived a very debauched lifestyle as a young man, but as heir to the throne, he needed a legal marriage. And one was arranged essentially for him with this woman here, Caroline of Brunswick, so what's now Germany. They were an ill-suited match. They absolutely loathed each other on sight. She was stocky. She was unwashed. It was said that she smelt like a farmyard. It's one description of her. She absolutely detested the man on meeting him, and the feeling was quite mutual. But they did their sort of dynastic duty. They got married. They married at the Chapel Royal in St. James's Palace in 1795. They spent their wedding night together. She got pregnant with a daughter, and that was essentially the last they ever saw of each other. Now, after the death of George III, when Prince Regent became King George IV, almost the first thing he did was put his wife on trial for adultery. She was basically living a separate life. This is a painting that is in the National Portrait Gallery, The Trial of Queen Caroline. It's taking place in the House of Lords, in a room designed by John Soane. Remember Karen telling us about John Soane last week. So this grand Soane room, sadly, one of many, many buildings and rooms that John Soane designed that just don't exist anymore. But we can see Queen Caroline there, this solitary figure amongst all of these men. It was a bit of a national humiliation for her, but she had massive support amongst the public. I found this picture. She was staying at a place called Brandenburg House, which is down on the River Thames, down in Fulham. And this painting shows her leaving for court one day during this trial. And you can see there are thousands of people turning out to support Queen Caroline. And Brandenburg House sadly doesn't exist anymore. It was pulled down in the Victorian period. But if you want to go and find where it was, this is what it looks like today. It's called Fulham Reach, which is a modern housing development. Stands where Brandenburg House down in Fulham used to stand. In a final indignity for Queen Caroline, when King George III has coronation day, and this is his coronation day, on the 19th of July, 1821, when she turned up for the coronation, she had the doors of the church slammed in her face. But this is the coronation of George IV, the day he'd waited for his entire life. And in typical Prinny fashion, he wanted the grandest, most opulent, most ostentatious, most expensive coronation the country had ever seen. The clothes that he was wearing that day cost 1.5 million in today's money, with a black Spanish hat with ostrich feathers and heron feathers. He had a silver doublet and hose, a red velvet robe that had a 24-foot long train that took 8 people to carry it. And he wasn't even happy with the crown jewels. So he had loads of more things made. If you go to the Tower of London and have a look at the crown jewels collection, when you go in past the Imperial State Crown, the St. Edward's Crown, you're going to find these objects as well, which were made for the coronation of King George IV in 1821. On the left is the coronation mantle, which weighs about 10 kilos, about 23 pounds, gold thread, very, very heavy, with a gold super tunica or sort of undergarment underneath it. And you'll notice it's embroidered with the thistle of Scotland and the shamrock of Ireland and the rose of England, so a great sort of heraldic garment. On the right is the jeweled sword of state with 2,280 diamonds on it, also made for the coronation of George IV. And for his banquet, for his coronation banquet, he had this rather magnificent gold punch bowl made, which weighs a quarter of a ton, and it holds 144 bottles of wine. So this preposterous, vulgar, outlandish, outrageous, bombastic prince set about rebuilding the centre of London in his image. And the centrepiece